This is truth be told.
That not only are there reptilians here,
new evidence of UFO fleets.
We were close to nuclear war.
To help you transform so that you can live your highest truth.
We're not being told just because we're not ready for it.
Radio stations of frequency, vibrational.
I was a homicide detective with LAPD.
UFOs increase. Visitations.
June 5th, 1968, presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy shot by Suran Suran shortly after midnight at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. And it sounded so simple, a closed and shut case. But after 54 years, a lot of questions are still left unanswered. Was Suran Suran the only shooter? As many believe, his brother's assassination was a conspiracy. Well, today we have author Lisa Peace in studio to talk about her book, A Lie Too Big to Fail, The Real History of the Assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. And we may hear some new evidence, or evidence that was never released to the public. And with her investigation, did she find answers to some of the questions that we have? Well, we're going to find out. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios for the first time, author Lisa Peace. We are live with Lisa. How are you doing, Lisa?
Oh, I've been better. This right. is not a good day politically, but right. I'm doing okay.
Yeah, it was a big shock to hear what's going on with the Supreme Court, and I know some people will love it and some people are not, but you know, it's one of those days in America that's going to put a wedge even deeper into the divide. So, unfortunately, and I mean, and actually, like you said, your story is really kind of ties into what we go, you know, what's happening with our political world today.
Yes. Today, there's a through line of history.
Oh, yeah.
Events 40 years ago are still affecting, or 60 years ago are still affecting mm-hmm. the world now. And people yeah. tend to say, oh, you know, it's Biden or it's this. It's like, oh, it goes way back.
Right. this goes way back.
Yeah.
And for those that can see the title, so you know it's mm-hmm. the real history of the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. And you wrote a book of that title. And so first of all, you were just probably a little girl when that happened.
I was very little, and I don't remember the assassination, but yeah. I do remember a special I saw a few years later about Robert Kennedy and his life.
Oh, really?
That ended with not only his assassination, but all these people lined up at the train track as his, you know, funeral train went by.
Wow.
And even as a kid, I had this thought, mm-hmm. oh my God, the most important man, the most best politician of my life is right. already dead, and I'm still a kid. I literally had that thought.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It's, I mean, and those things do stay in the minds of the people that not only alive, but people that love history.
Yes.
Because events like that are the events that change the course of American or in world history.
Yes.
I mean, so a man like that, some people may see him as a threat to America, as I've heard of communism and all kinds of stuff. But
yeah.
then, you know, he was a man that probably would have brought some more integrity to the White House, hopefully.
Yes.
So how did you get involved with the
story. So first of all, I got into the JFK assassination first. And
right.
I did that because right before the internet went public, it's like the last two books I had read before I did my first online
right.
search were on the JFK assassination. I picked them up at a garage sale in Venice, California. And I read them. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. So I go online for the first time in my very first search ever, JFK assassination. And I found a news group where they were hotly debating the case in very rude terms. And I quickly got insulted, and I don't like to lose an argument. So 5 years later, I had learned a lot. But in the course of my research on the JFK case, one time I was at the library, and I pulled out, you know, the drawer of microfilm or what
right.
I thought was what I was looking for. And it was the wrong drawer, but it was the right drawer for the RFK case because there were
wow.
the LAPD's files on microfilm. And I knew just enough to know
really?
They'd only been released 4 years earlier. They were suppressed until 1988, and this was somewhere in 1992
right.
when I found them. And they were completely unmarked, you know, so I threw one in at random. I mean, all it said was like SUS, which was Special Unit Senator.
Right, right.
That's what they call it. So I threw a reel in, and the very first reel I threw in talked about a different guy arrested at the hotel that night who was not named Sirhan Sirhan.
Wow.
So, of course, that got my attention. Well, who's this other guy? What's his story? Why did he get released? And why are we told there's never been any other suspects when they arrested somebody? I mean, they didn't arrest him and charge him and jail him.
Right.
But they apprehended him. And it turns out they actually apprehended two different people at the hotel that night. And they told the third guy, you look so guilty, you really need a better alibi. And then he magically came up with one. And then the day, you know, they were like concerned about right. him. They had a conversation with the CIA, and that same day, they decided that third guy wasn't a suspect anymore. That guy, by the way, once ran for mayor in Beverly Hills. So I'm not going to name him because I don't want to be sued.
Right, right.
But the press commented on him. He seems so secretive. We can't seem to find out anything about this guy.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's these people, if you don't arrest them, they persist. In the JFK case, for example, there's a new documentary out about Ruth Payne,
right.
the woman who housed Oswald and
right,
his
right.
wife, Marina. And the documentary makes a pretty good case that she's been lying all these years and that she was definitely in on the plot. And, you know, it's just, again, if you don't stop these people, if you don't call them out publicly, they keep doing bad things.
Well, I think the bad thing is what's happening today, which is even back then. Nowadays, there's so much news cycle, fast news cycle,
mm-hmm.
we forget real easy.
Yes. And you can't do anything in depth.
Yes.
In fact, when my book came out, CNN contacted me and
oh,
they're
really?
Like, we want to put you up with Robert Mayhew, his son.
Right.
Because he's somebody I talk about in my book. And, you know, they wanted to like do a 5-minute segment with us basically arguing with each other. I'm like, that might be dramatic, but that's not going to educate the public. I'm
right.
like, I'm really not interested in doing that.
Right.
But I would be interested in just talking to you about what really happened, if you're interested in that. And they could never find a spot in the news cycle because Trump was always doing something else that they wanted to talk
right,
about that
right.
day. And so after like a couple weeks, they just dropped it.
They're just like, yeah.
yeah.
Again, whereas, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's like there's so much goes on in the news cycle that we just, history we forget.
Yeah.
And where does your book begin and end the Robert Kennedy, not just assassination, but his career or did build
well,
up
I,
to that? Or?
I focus primarily on the assassination because the accused assassin is still alive and in jail and should be freed, which
right.
is the argument I make in my book. But I did start the day of the California primary, which was June 4th, 1968.
Right.
After midnight, he came down and gave his acceptance speech. And then he walked through this little pantry area en route to the print media because they hadn't been allowed to talk to him. He was all in front
right.
of the TV cameras until then. And Sirhan stepped out, pulled out a gun, fired at him. Kennedy went down. People who saw that drew the logical conclusion,
that
you know, that Sirhan must have killed him.
Right.
But when you look at the facts, of course, it's a very, very different story. And even I was shocked. I mean, I was expecting to find a conspiracy because, you know, they had this other guy arrested.
Right,
what's
right,
that about?
Right.
Obviously, we've been lied to, so that piqued my curiosity. But it's so much worse than that because, for one, I looked at all the witnesses. There were about 70 witnesses in the pantry, and they all gave statements. And I literally made a spreadsheet of, like, who saw what, and did they see the gun? Did they see Sirhan?
Right.
There were only a few people who actually saw both Robert Kennedy and Sirhan at the moment of the shooting.
Hmm.
And those people put them facing each other with Sirhan's gun muzzle, not even his body, but his gun muzzle 3 feet in front of Robert Kennedy. And that's a problem because the coroner said Kennedy was shot from like one to one and a half inches behind the right ear. And he was also shot under his right arm at such a close range that the L.A. criminalist put the gun even closer. He said those shots were probably a quarter of an inch, but he multiplied it by three to get 3/4 of an inch. I mean, the gun was practically touching him, and Sirhan never got that close because people were watching them both.
Well, yeah, because
you
there
know,
was
once
a lot of people
somebody
around.
Pulls out a gun, your eyes don't go away from that. You know,
right,
you don't.
Right.
Ooh, do do do. You know,
and it
what's
wasn't
going
like
on
just
in the world?
You
know,
just,
you're intensely focused on.
And it wasn't like somebody just somebody was walking by. This was Robert
right.
Kennedy, who
exactly.
had just won the Democratic primary in California. So, definitely.
But there were witnesses to guns closer, but they couldn't connect. Those witnesses could never connect that gun to Sirhan. Either they said it wasn't him or they said, I didn't see the face. But those who saw Sirhan clearly, it's like he never got that close. It's just not possible. And then that begs the question, well, what's he doing then? Why is he firing? If he didn't shoot him, what was his role? And through a lot of research, it turns out none of the bullets from his gun, none of the bullets
his
from
was
the
a 22,
pantry.
Right?
Yeah, because Robert Kennedy was shot 4 times and 2 bullets were removed from him. One went through his clothes and one went through his chest, but out.
Oh, wow.
But they pulled 2 bullets from him. One was so crumpled in the head they couldn't compare it to anything, but one was fairly intact in the back of his neck. So they tried to do a bullet comparison with that. Couldn't match it to Sirhan's gun. And that was a problem because 5 other people were shot and bullets were removed from each of those 5 people.
So was it different bullets, or was it just one that left his body and go into somebody else?
Well, Kennedy was shot from behind and the shot went back to front, but the people who were also shot were behind Kennedy.
Well, how come Sirhan wasn't hit if somebody shot from the back and if he was standing in front?
Well, the shots that went back to front, first of all, they were at a steep upward angle.
Yeah,
they were literally at like an 80 degree angle, and we can see that because there's police photos of them sticking metal probes through like a mock-up of Kennedy see the angle of the gun. But who shot the people behind him then? Because whoever is shooting Kennedy at close range probably didn't just turn around and start randomly firing into the crowd, right? That doesn't make any sense. But there were, again, 4 credible witnesses who saw a shooter on the table right next to where Sirhan was standing. And he looked like Sirhan, and he had a blue coat, which is not what Sirhan was wearing, but Sirhan was in a blue velour shirt. And so it was easy enough to like merge them. So in people's minds, and one woman was just 100% certain. She said, I saw Sirhan shoot him from the table, and then he jumped down. And when I questioned her at length on this, because she was on CNN saying this story, and I questioned her at some depth here in Los Angeles when she passed through. And she's like, well, I didn't really see his face. But then when he started shooting from the ground, I knew it must be the same person. And I'm like,
That's not factual.
No. That's a guess. That's a theory, but that's not a fact.
It's like I saw a guy with black hair, maybe a blue shirt, so it had to be him.
Yeah. And what the police did, of course, is they told everybody, you saw Sirhan. So no matter what he was wearing or, there are people who saw a guy in short sleeves. Sirhan had long sleeves. Some guy thought the shooter was blonde, but Sirhan was dark hair. But they told them all, you saw Sirhan. So in everybody's mind, I saw the shooter.
But wasn't at that time the LA police also kind of a corrupt police and, being foreign?
Yes.
He was an immigrant and, killing a senator.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. It's funny because the CIA actually had an operation called Operation Artichoke because this was before MKUltra.
Right.
And they're like, can we get a foreign national to commit an act of attempted assassination as part of a larger plot? In other words, can we trick somebody into being a patsy for an assassination attempt but not be the real killer?
Right.
And I really think that's what happened to Sirhan. And there's an interesting case that happened in 2017, very recently, that I think explains a little bit about why I say Sirhan is innocent. Kim Jong-il is the leader of North Vietnam.
Right.
But he had a half-brother, Kim Jong-nam, and there were some succession issues as to, who
and
should
that's
rule
the one
next.
That killed,
and he died in an airport in a very interesting way. It was supposedly part of a TV stunt. One woman ran up and sprayed random people with water. The other person ran up with a towel and dried them off. But he comes through, they spray him with water, wipe him off, and he dies a couple hours later because that towel had a VX nerve agent on it.
Oh, my God.
And so then the question is, did the women know that they were killing him, or were they tricked into participating in an assassination without their knowledge? And that is, I think, the role of Sirhan. Because the woman who, by the way, put the towel with she showed up the next day ready to do it again. So if she was guilty and knew she'd killed him, she would have been out of the country, right?
Right.
She would have run and keep running. She wouldn't show up at the same place ready to do it again. So in Sirhan's case, there's really good evidence that he was hypnotized. And I know that sounds crazy, although your audience, I'm sure, has I know you've had hypnotists.
Oh, no, no. We've heard this before. In fact, yeah. I think I saw that because Robert Kennedy was in Watts or something like that, or he went down and speaking to a lot of African Americans. And of course, you know, not too many candidates did that at the time.
Right. Well, he went to South Africa during segregation.
Right. Segregation. Yes. And you said Sirhan did say that he thought Kennedy was a saint at one point?
Yeah, at one point, yeah. Sirhan said that during the trial. He's like, yeah, I don't know why I would have killed him. I mean, when I looked at him, I saw a saint. And, you know, and it's a long story and a long way getting there. Right. But I had a personal experience with hypnosis that really freaked me out. So I want to share that.
Yeah, please.
And that's, I went to a lot of shows while I was writing the book because I wanted to understand how does hypnosis really work?
Right.
You know, and can you get somebody to do something they wouldn't normally do? Because all hypnotists will say, oh, you can't make somebody do something.
Unless they're
willing
to do it, yeah.
Women have successfully sued their hypnotists for forcing them to have sex under hypnosis.
I've heard
so
that before.
You can. Get somebody to do, which is, you know, be very careful, and especially the stage hypnosis. So anyway, I was at a county fair, and I talked to this woman who I didn't know she was going to be a part of the show, but it turned out she was one of the volunteers. I talked to her for like 20 minutes before the show. Perfectly normal, nice, intelligent, just normal, everyday person. She goes up on stage. She's handed a piece of play money and told it's a $35,000 check. And she gets super excited. Of course, I won. And then the show ends, and the hypnotist is like, okay, you're all unhypnotized. Goodbye. Well, at a previous show, the hypnotist had warned us, oh, and by the way, don't talk to the people after they come off the stage. It's really not a good idea. So, of course, I wanted to talk to somebody.
The more you tell me not to.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, why shouldn't I? But I didn't go for her. I actually went to talk to the hypnotist himself about the Sirhan case because I wanted to get his opinion.
Hey, yeah.
And as soon as I mentioned Sirhan, he got visibly uncomfortable and left the area. Now, he's too young to have been involved, but it must be something that hypnotists talk about because it was like he knew right away where that conversation was going and he didn't want any part of it. But then after he left, I noticed this woman was still there and she looked really distressed. I'm like, I thought maybe she'd lost her family or something. And so I went up to her. I'm like, are you okay? What's going on? And she's like, well, I have to give this back. And I'm like, oh, it's just play money. I don't think he cares. And she goes, no, it's a $35,000 check and I have to give it back. And I'm freaking out because it's not. It's just like a Monopoly $100 bill.
Right.
And so I'm like, can I hold it with you? Can we look at this together? Can we pull it a little closer? What do you see in that upper corner? Do you see $100? And she goes, no, it's a $35,000 check. And I just freaked out because she was in the grip of a hypnotic illusion and could not see what was really happening.
Mm.
And that's when I realized that's what they did to Sirhan. But I didn't know what was he seeing in the pantry that made him pull out a gun and fire. And so I found the answer when I looked
through. Is it
through.
Like a word? Or?
Well, Dan Brown is one of the country's best hypnotists and has written textbooks.
Right.
And he got 60 hours with Sirhan. In the course of that, he was able to hypnotize him and take him through. Because Sirhan has always said he doesn't remember what happened.
Right.
He has like one memory of almost being out of hypnosis because he was literally being strangled.
Right.
So it's like he almost became conscious at that point. And then he lost it again. But in the course of that, Sirhan had followed a girl. This is what he remembered under Dan Brown's hypnosis. He'd followed a girl in a polka dot dress into the pantry because he said she had an unspoken availability about her, and he thought he might get lucky that night. So he was following her like a puppy dog, and then he remembers him holding her on a tray stand, which is, by the way, exactly what two different witnesses reported.
Mm-hmm.
One of them said it looked like she was holding him on the tray stand. And Sirhan remembers somebody coming in, and, you know, I assume Robert Kennedy.
Right.
He didn't name him. But she said the girl looked up to her right. Well, I've been in the pantry, and if you were on that tray stand and you looked up to your right, you'd be looking at the shooter on the table because that was your direct line of sight. And then the girl walked him to the center of the room and pinched him a certain way. And Sirhan said, and suddenly I was back at the range. He'd been at a firing range all day.
That day he was at a firing range.
Yes, he was at a firing range for no particular reason because he's not really a big fan of guns or a big gun person. But he'd been there for like at least 5 hours and, you know, maybe longer depending on which witnesses you believe. But he's like, so I pulled out my gun. I started firing at the targets. that was what he saw. That was not him trying to kill Robert Kennedy. That was him in the grip of a hypnotic illusion, just like the woman with her $35,000 check. And when I finally understood that, I felt so sorry for Sirhan.
Yes.
Again, here's this Palestinian immigrant who left his home when it was bombed.
I was going to ask you about that,
yeah,
too.
The Israeli, they call it the Nakba, or the Great Disaster, on the right. Palestinian side, and they call it the War of Independence, you know, because it's all about your perspective, right, where
right.
you sit.
Right.
But they had a middle-class home with a yard. I mean, they used to be like living in Pasadena yeah. in Palestine until this happened. Then they were shoved into a home with 40 other families, one pit in the basement for a toilet. They slept on rags that were stuffed together to form mattresses. They ate twice a week when the UN trucks came by.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh, wow.
Just horrific. So they escaped to America with the help of a church, and, you know, a church that happened to be CIA connected. What a
right.
surprise. the National Council of Churches. But they got a home in Pasadena, and he was trying to make a life for himself, and he was doing very well in school until his older sister got very ill. And
oh,
then he ended
really?
Up dropping out to care for her. And, of course, at the trial, they really didn't bring that out, so he just looked like a dropout. And, you know, so again, it's like his whole life has been misportrayed. And they say, you know, he's terrible, violent, he hated the Jews and the Israelis. Well, he certainly hated what they had done to his family.
True, right.
And
yeah.
I think most of us can sympathize, you know, if we'd been attacked, we would
right.
have some pretty strong opinions too.
Now, did he have, I heard something about he was upset about Kennedy, Robert Kennedy.
The bombers. This
yes.
is something that was introduced by his defense team because he had no visual, he had no motive.
Right.
And he didn't remember killing him or why he would even
right.
want to kill him. But in his pocket, there was an article about Israel, and they tried to say, oh, there was a broadcast, and he heard that, and that was, you
there was
know,
an article
his motivation.
In his pocket at the time?
There was an article in his pocket at the time about Israel.
That's kind of, that's
yeah,
kinda,
but it could be planted.
I was going to say, that kind of
yeah.
seems planted
yeah,
in a way.
Exactly.
Why would you just carry that around?
Yeah, he also had in his pocket the lyrics to the song, "This Man Is Your Man, This Man Is My Man."
Oh, that, which
from
what they
California.
Sang, yeah. yeah.
"This Man Is Robert Kennedy." That was like his little campaign
right, yeah,
song. They had
yeah.
taken that and rewritten it. And the lyrics to that were in his pocket. So, you know, it's like, how much did he hate him if he's carrying like
right.
a song praising Robert Kennedy? You know, it's like just random stuff. He also had $400 on him, which sounds weird.
That's a lot of money.
People don't
then.
Carry that. But I talked to his brother Munir, and he's like, we always carried a lot of cash around because they didn't have bank accounts. You know, it's like they were
that.
Immigrants. It was a different story
yeah.
then. And they made a big deal about him leaving his wallet in the car. And Munir's like, that's what we all did in those days.
Back in the day, yeah. We
yeah.
didn't, you know,
yeah.
we weren't worried about people breaking into our cars back then.
Exactly, exactly. But what's really sinister is the police knew all this. They knew he was in the grip of something. The DA, the assistant DA,
right.
interviewed him, you know, a couple hours after he was arrested. And he stopped himself in the middle of the interview and he goes, do you know where you are? Do you know what you've been charged with? It was clear to him that something was really off about
were
this
guy. Were these
guy.
All taped?
They're taped and transcribed.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Did
so
you get
can,
to hear?
I listened to some of the tapes, and I read two versions of the transcriptions because the LAPD and the FBI did separate transcriptions. They're not identical.
They're not identical.
And there's, I think, better information in the FBI one because it wasn't really the FBI's case, so they didn't have to cover it up so much. It was the LAPD's, and so there's some interesting little changes
well,
between the two.
You have to think, I mean, if you think about it, even today, the school shooting in, what's the Texas
Uvalde,
town?
Uvalde, or I don't know if I'm saying it right.
Uvalde, yeah. So, I mean, even in that particular shooting,
mm-hmm.
they were keeping a lot of information and what was actually getting out to the, you know, locked
yeah.
doors that were
yeah.
not locked.
Yeah, they kept changing the story and
so
was there a stand down order
yeah.
or wasn't there? And
so
why
it shows
did they
you
wait?
That
yeah.
police departments do protect themselves.
Yeah.
Because I'm curious.
Oh, and you mentioned earlier, I want to
yeah,
go back
ahead,
to that, because you said the LAPD was known to be
corrupt.
Yeah,
yes.
In the 90s, we had the Rodney King
mm-hmm.
beating. And everybody, you know, who lived in L.A. at the time was horrified by
right.
this. And there was a huge investigation. They found out that the, you know, organization had been corrupt way back to the 50s, so which, before the...
Which would have been
and
through
the 60s, station
right?
That was like the most corrupt was the one that did the Kennedy investigation, wow. The Rampart Station. And so, you know, I remember when I heard about the Rampart scandal, then I started reading. I'm like, is that the same Rampart Station? And yes, it was.
So what do you think, for your own personal opinion and your research, why they were so hesitant to give out the true...
I think it's really simple, because people are like, well, the police, were they all in on the conspiracy? No, I don't think so. I think here's the case of they knew it was a conspiracy, but they only had one guy. And so it's easier to just pretend it isn't a conspiracy
so
to alleviate the public.
So instead of embarrassment type of thing?
Yeah, or? Because they actually had an APB out for this girl in the polka dot dress, because there were a number of witnesses. There were like 5 different witnesses who gave credible accounts right. of seeing her with Sirhan all night during... at the hotel. And so they had for 2 weeks, they had an APB out for that
girl.
They
just dropped it.
And they finally canceled it. The first APB also had a guy in a gold sweater with the girl, who was also seen with Sirhan by a number of witnesses that night. And he disappeared after the first night. Now that I can't explain, like somebody seemed to have some inside knowledge that guy should not be fingered. But the girl, it's like they wanted to find the girl and they never did. And so rather than say it's a conspiracy, but we only got one of them, they just decided, well, we'll just say it's not a conspiracy. And here's the thing, the guy who was the criminalist, Dwayne Wolfer, had already forged bullets in an earlier case. And he even admitted to that in a hearing later. And it's like, this guy was known as the guy who would fix the evidence for you and give you whatever you needed.
Right.
And in fact, he became so infamous in the department that in the 80s, the LA Times said, you know, he became a joke and they called it a Wolferism whenever somebody like went way beyond what the evidence showed. So, and Wolfer himself appears to have switched the bullets, because the original bullet that was pulled from Kennedy's neck, it's like a 22, which is about the size of a pencil.
Right.
So if you can imagine writing on the back, the eraser of the pencil, the coroner had inscribed TN31 there. And he reiterated that at the grand jury and said, yes, I always put the last 2 digits of the autopsy case number with my initials on a bullet. But the bullet in evidence now says DWTN, DW probably Dwayne Wolfer, trying to imitate, this is the Dwayne Wolfer Thomas Noguchi bullet. And why would they have to switch the bullets if any of them had come from Sirhan's gun? They wouldn't. They'd only have to switch the bullets. And here's the thing. Wolfer even fired like 7 test bullets.
Right.
You know, technically 8, but somehow one mysteriously got lost. I always thought he kept that in his back pocket for if the case ever did go to trial. But the problem was none of those bullets matched any of the victims. Because if they had, they could have lost the Kennedy or said, oh, it crumbled and we couldn't compare it. You know, they always have ways to explain things away. But when they couldn't explain away, and now they had 2 sets of bullets that didn't match each other because they were from 2 other shooters not named Sirhan, Wolfer basically says to the court, I went and I found a gun with a very close serial number and made test bullets with that. And I believe him, because as guns come off the assembly line, we all learned about how guns are created on assembly lines in school. every gun has a slight, you know, defect or shape to it inside. The closer you can get, the closer to the same defect.
Right.
And so when people examined the bullets in 1975 as part of a special court-ordered panel, because questions were surfacing, they could say at that time, they're like, well, the bullets match each other. But they still don't match Sirhan's gun.
What did the press report?
They reported that, you know, only one gun had been used.
Right.
They didn't say, but it couldn't be linked to Sirhan, which was the other finding. So,
if the bullets of Sirhan did not enter Kennedy, and Sirhan did say, I did pull the trigger, where did his bullets land?
He wasn't firing bullets.
Blanks.
He was firing blanks. And
got it.
Isn't that a great magic trick? Because
that
here you have the guy pulling focus. He's directly in the line of the assassins.
Right.
If he has real bullets, he might kill the actual assassin before he gets the job done.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of brilliant, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
And another reason we know he had blanks, a number of witnesses like, God, it really sounded like a cap gun. I thought for sure it was a cap gun. I've got like a dozen witnesses saying this. And then others say, I saw a visible flame coming from the gun. You don't see that when you fire a handgun, but you do see that when you fire a cap gun. That's why Hollywood uses them, because they look like they're being fired.
Right.
And so, yeah, one was like, I literally saw his gun being fired. I know he was fired. I'm like, well, if you saw it, then he wasn't firing bullets. You
know? Well, in the pictures, and in fact, we're going to take questions from the chat room. So if you guys have questions for our amazing guest, Lisa Pease, please leave it in the chat room. There's already several in there. But the person or assassin behind him, mm-hmm. was this security? Was this a Secret Service?
The person at Robert Kennedy's?
Yeah, because there's pictures of people behind him. So.
Yes, there was a guard who was holding his elbow where he was shot. And I need another person to demonstrate that. But if he's holding the elbow with his left hand and his right hand has a gun, he can literally like hide his own gun, and because people didn't see the guard shoot Kennedy. But there was somebody who thought he saw the guard with a smoking gun afterwards, which is interesting. And definitely there were people who saw the guard with his gun pulled and not pointing at Sirhan, but pointing back down at Kennedy. It's like, you know, that freaked out a producer who saw that. He's like, why was the gun pointing that way? And why didn't the police want to hear about that? And why is this interview still redacted to today?
Do we know who this was? It Caesar?
So the guy's name was Thane Eugene Caesar.
Yeah.
And I looked into his background. And there are things called public records databases. It's like, I don't even want to name them. White Pages is one. I think there's something called Intelligence or IntelliSense. There's a number of these. There's the ones where you catch a cheater. You know, all these things are just like public records. When people sign for a bank loan or buy a car or contribute to an election, all of that goes into these central databases. So I paid three different ones to look up Thane Caesar. And sure enough, all three of them came back saying he was a contract agent for the CIA.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm like, what? Because in all these years, it was hard for me to understand that not one researcher had ever thought to do that before. It's like, this isn't, you know, and it's shocking to me that he would put that on his forms.
Right.
He must have felt really protected that he could even say that. It also is he didn't have any other job to use as cover.
Right.
You know, there was one point where it looked like he worked for GM. And so I looked up GM, and interestingly enough, they had like their first female president had come right out of the CIA.
Really? I did not know that.
I mean, the CIA and big business, there's always been a nexus there, but I didn't dream I could find something that specific.
In that quick, I'm sure. So whatever happened to him after that?
So he, after the assassination, he left the country, went to the Philippines.
How convenient.
And especially because we had no extradition treaty with the Philippines until like the 1990s. And that's when Dan Moldea supposedly talked to him and put him on a lie detector and then said, gee, I believe him. He passed the lie detector. Look, if you can't pass a lie detector, you can't work for the CIA.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like base requirement. You have to be able to pass a lie detector, at least an amateurish one, you know. And the questions they asked him were very interesting. Like, outside of this time frame, did you ever beat your children? I'm like, in other words, he clearly beat his children during the time frame they said aside from. I mean, the questions were so weird. And like, did you shoot him that night? Well, it wasn't night. It was morning. You know, so it's like the way the questions were framed, I could see where he could have answered them all honestly and still been entirely guilty. And I can't be the only person who thinks like this. You know, it's logic. You just have to be logical about this. So
was he the security that Kennedy hired, or was it provided from somebody else?
It was a security. So the hotel knew their own security, which, by the way, was staffed with a lot of former LAPD officers and run by a high-level, you know, former CIA, LAPD detective. And I use those terms interchangeably because the CIA and the LAPD worked together on many projects.
Yeah.
But this was Ace Security, which was a separate company that had been called. Caesar had only gotten a job with them a week prior. I mean, literally, May 25th, he got his first gig with them. And then June 5th is his second gig with them. And Kennedy dies literally in his arms.
Wow.
You know, or shot in his arms. He didn't die for another 25 hours. But, you know, it's and like I said, I don't know if he was CIA then, but he was working for Howard Hughes then, and I know this because I met
the
one
security
of
the, guy was Caesar.
Yes, yes. And
interesting.
Howard Hughes' Las Vegas operations at that time are run by Robert Mayhew, who we started with. Mayhew was the handpicked CIA guy to run the Castro assassination plots. Now you got to know that you don't pick a guy off the street to run an assassination plot against a major leader, unless he has experience doing assassinations, right? So Mayhew is and the guy that I knew at Hughes, whose name was John Meyer, who was very high up and actually kind of above Mayhew in the sense that he actually got to talk to Howard Hughes directly. Howard Hughes would never talk to Mayhew directly. He only communicated by writing letters because he didn't want Mayhew to have a picture in his mind of what he was becoming at that point in time. But John Meyer recognized the name Thane Caesar right away, and he started asking questions, and Mayhew came down on him like a ton of bricks. Don't you ever mention that name here again,
really?
Ever. And he put all this in his diary, and he didn't talk about it for like 30 years. And I caught up with him in Canada on a kind of a different thing that was related to Watergate that had nothing to do with this. And just before I left him, he's like, he told me a story about how he and Hoover, because he had known, he'd known everybody because he was rich and he was like one of Howard Hughes' top guys, so he knew everybody. And he's like, Hoover said this was a Mayhew operation, but Hoover said, but I'm powerless against the CIA.
Well, I was going to say that because I know J. Edgar really didn't like Robert back when he was Attorney General for his brother. So I didn't know, you know, if the FBI felt about this.
Yeah, well, the thing is the CIA had blackmailed Hoover back in 1947 because Hoover was trying to prevent the creation of the CIA because it was infringing on his territory.
Right.
He had a worldwide network at that point. And so he was trying to stop them. So the CIA basically got a picture of him having sex with Clyde Tolson and used that to silence him. And, you know, the government by blackmail. So I totally, when he told me that Hoover said I'm powerless against the CIA, I knew already what he meant because it's like, yeah, he was. And I didn't think Meyer knew what I knew, so it added to the credibility of it. But so Hoover, it's like he kind of knew, and it's funny because by 1972, Hoover was like out. He was out from under CIA. So I think he rigorously investigated this case because he wanted to be able to get himself out, you know, to have counter blackmail, basically, because that was Hoover's, you know, modus operandi too. I mean, and here's the thing, you know, with what's happening today and everywhere, our government is blackmailed. People who watch, what was that, Olivia Pope, whatever that show was. This is unfortunately how government works. It's whoever gets the most dirt can control the votes,
and that's unfortunate.
And that's it's really unfortunate. And it's interesting, I was reading about Athenian democracy because I'm like, what happened to them and are we next? And they didn't have elections. They appointed people by lottery. And I thought there's a little bit of a genius in that because then everybody has to be super well educated because you might have to answer to them someday.
Right.
So it made the whole society invested in everybody else's education. I thought that's kind of interesting.
That would be interesting.
I don't know if that could work here. It certainly couldn't work here today. We'd have to get the education levels a lot higher.
definitely. Well, while you're taking a sip, I'm going to take a few questions from the chat room. Some of these are comments. This was interesting. Renee said extraterrestrial aliens, because we talk about UFOs a lot here, hypnotize us human beings with virtual reality, which I've interviewed many people that have been abducted and they don't remember what happened of an abduction or, you know.
Of course, then the question is, were they really abducted or were they hypnotized to believe they were abducted?
Possibly.
And either way, it's possibly interesting.
And it's when we say extraterrestrials, we don't know if it's from outer space or if it's government officials that's doing it.
Exactly.
You know? So we don't know what's happening, and there's always an agenda maybe on both sides. So thank you, Renee, for that. And then we have one for Char. Say, why do you think Sirhan was granted life imprisonment while Lee Harvey Oswald was killed after the assassination of JFK?
Well, I'm pretty sure they wanted Sirhan to be killed. In fact, there was a really weird side story where Sirhan supposedly, bought a horse the night before and was supposed to pick it up at the Ambassador Hotel, which would explain the $400 on him, too.
Right, which that would explain.
Yeah, and the theory being if he somehow managed to escape, he'd go get the horse, and then he'd be on horseback running away, and the police would gun him down.
Now, that's a good Western ending, but...
And in the pantry, people did try and kill him, and there were people protecting him because of what had happened to Lee Harvey Oswald. Had he been the first, I'm sure he would have been killed. But since he was, like, by then the fourth, because it wasn't just JFK, it was Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, all of which have big open questions about what really happened. And so, yeah, there was an effort to protect him. And he did get the death penalty.
They switched
that. But then the death penalty was canceled. It was later reinstated, but the people who were in jail while it was canceled were not suddenly put back on death row. Okay. That so was that deemed too cruel and too unusual. Yeah, so that's why he's still alive today.
And I know there's several of the Kennedy clan that Robert Kennedy Jr. was for him to get for parole.
Yes.
Douglas Kennedy also wanted parole.
Yes.
Kathleen Kennedy Townsend went silent. She didn't say either way.
Right, she abstained, basically. But she had also said she would like to see the case reinvestigated because she doesn't believe we've learned the truth.
And so, but then there's, of course, a lot of others.
Yeah, that's... and I met, not Carrie, I met Carrie too, but I met Rory, the youngest.
Right.
And I mentioned to her, I was writing a book about her father, and her face just went so sad.
Mm.
And... it made me sad.
Yeah.
She's like, I never knew my father.
Yeah.
And I couldn't say any more to her after that. So it's like, I can totally forgive her. I can forgive Carrie, although it's a little harder with Carrie because she runs a human rights organization.
Right, right.
And she's seen other people suffer for the crimes of the government in other countries. But it's so emotional for these people.
Mm.
They're not able to rise out of that emotion. They were children at the time.
Yeah.
And they're like emotionally imprinted with that truth, and no other truth will ever get through to them, even though it was not the truth then and it's not the truth now.
And somebody else was saying about Kennedy curse. We were talking about that before. We're like, is it really a curse?
Yeah. And I, of course, I don't think it's a curse. I think the curse is that this is a family that's tried to do a lot of good in the world. And there are a lot of people who don't want that particular form of good
to
be done in this world.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of, we're seeing the results of that with today's Supreme Court decision.
Yeah.
You know, I've argued on other stations that the Nazis kind of won World War II in the sense that, you know, although we kind of won the battle, the intelligence agencies, Alan Dulles and the CIA, brought the Nazis here to America and embedded them
in
our agencies. And they built our rockets and our spaceships and God knows what else they did. And so it's like...
It is weird how we forgive all that. As long as you help us...
Yeah, yeah. It's okay to torture and kill and exterminate a whole race of people. But hey, you know science, you know?
Yeah, that's what I never understood that when they would say that. But they would say, you know, you can kill millions of people, but yet, as long as you help us build weapons and also, you know, flight to the moon and airplanes.
Well, and they
stuff.
Also helped us run some Nazi-like experiments ourselves. I mean, the whole history of the CIA's mind control is pretty terrifying because they did it primarily on unwitting, unconsenting adults who didn't know what was happening to them. And some of them in later years successfully sued the agency, and still so little is ever talked about on the news because it doesn't fit the news cycle, as we talked about earlier.
Yeah, and I mean, like we also talked about how Hollywood kind of replicates true life and sometimes either predicts it or even just shows you what, and I hate to, like even Jason Bourne, you know, the series, how he was an assassin.
And he was an assassin.
And he didn't remember who he was.
Although in the third episode, it's like, but he chose to go in there. And I thought that was kind of a nasty twist because that's not usually how it works.
Right. But, you know, so, I mean, it shows you how Hollywood sometimes, you know, is connected to how politics, CIA, all this is run.
Oh, yeah. There's some good books on that, Operation Hollywood. And,
yeah.
And, in fact, after Oliver Stone's film JFK came out, the CIA literally set up a public affairs office in Hollywood so that that could never happen again.
Yeah, because that was a great movie, by the way.
It was a great movie, truly.
I'm surprised they don't have... one about RFK because I mean he would have changed. I don't think Nixon would have got reelected.
No,
I think you know there would have been a whole different.
Yes, at the 1968 convention, No, it was the 64 convention. After his brother had been killed and before he was running for president, Robert Kennedy spoke at the Democratic convention, or he tried to speak, for 20 minutes. And you can see this on YouTube. You can watch the whole thing. For 20 minutes, the audience cheered so loud he could not say anything. And, of course, he knew they were cheering for his brother and not
right,
him.
Right, but still.
And it wasn't until he ran for office that he finally felt some of the cheers were for him.
Right, right. You're like,
in fact, after he lost Oregon, it's like, finally, I'm going to succeed or fail on my own, you know, person, and I'm not going to win just because I'm a Kennedy.
Yeah.
And then, tragically, of course, the very next race was in California.
Well, let's see what else we got here. It's so sad to hear an innocent man being placed in jail for over 50 years. That is his whole life. What does the case say to you about the justice system, the LAPD investigation, and other cases?
Yes, and that's one of the reasons I like to talk about the book and ask people to read it, because I think it'll expose what police probably do all over the country in a lot of routine cases that we never hear about because it's not somebody famous. And in fact, I had a friend at work who was volunteering with the public defender's office in Los Angeles. And as I was explaining to him about the bullet switching, he goes, oh, yeah, that's in the manual. It's like, that's so common. They literally wrote it up for the public defender's office.
Really?
And I'm like, give me a copy of that. He's like, oh, I'm pretty sure I can't do that.
That would have been awesome to have, though.
Yes, yes. But I mean, he was an honest man, you know, right. I was an honest coworker. So I believed him when he told me that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It's like, wow. You know, so, yeah, please don't be so hard on people who've been in jail. You know, who knows if they even deserved it in the first place.
You know, there's some people that do. And, like, how many people we've heard over the years that have been released after 20, 30 years to prove that they didn't do it, thank goodness, through DNA.
Yes. Yes, the Innocence Project has released many. And, you know, people always say, oh, people don't confess to a crime they didn't commit. And that's just not true. And I show in my book, there's like hundreds and hundreds of cases where people have confessed to crimes they didn't commit because somebody told them that was the way to go. And Sirhan in 1988, I think it was 88, 87, one of those two, he was on a David Frost interview and basically said, look, I killed Kennedy, you know, because of the Israeli thing. And, you know, it's like he said all this stuff and like, I fully admit guilt. His lawyers scripted that for him, the questions and the answers, because they promised him if he said that, he would get paroled. And what's the irony is he almost did.
Really?
He really was about to get paroled. And then his lawyers suddenly came up with some letter he had written to somebody, and Sirhan had made a joke about, you know, I'm going to kill you. But he and that guy used to always joke like that. But the lawyers didn't tell anybody that and made it look like he's still a killer. We have to keep him inside. And it's just heartbreaking what's been done. And, you know, here's the thing. If he gets freed, you think people might care who really killed Robert Kennedy. Even if he's free on parole, though, it's like, no one's going to redo the investigation.
No.
So I don't know what the CIA is afraid of. Let the man go. He's not going to, like, threaten your operations. He's not going to expose anything. He really doesn't remember. You know, even under hypnosis, he doesn't remember. The last thing he remembers is being at the shooting range again, even though he wasn't. He doesn't remember seeing Kennedy come in. He doesn't remember firing at Kennedy.
Well, so have you had a chance to talk with Sirhan?
I have not. I've talked to his brother many times. His brother lives in Pasadena. I've been to the house. It's like frozen in time.
Really?
Sirhan's bedroom is still there. He showed it to me. Yeah, it's like a little museum piece. And I did meet Robert Kennedy Jr.
What did he say?
And I got him in touch with Sirhan's lawyer so he could go down and meet Sirhan.
Oh, they did meet.
Because he's in San Diego. And they met. Yeah, and so I called him as he was on his way back. I said, what'd you think? And he goes, Lisa, he's a sweet man. It's like, I feel really sorry for him. You know, he shouldn't be in jail. And he's been trying to help, you know, in whatever way he can. Mm. And it's interesting because the family had told him they were going to stay out of Sirhan's parole hearing this last time around. And then they wrote a letter without telling him. And he was really upset because it's like they pulled a fast one on him. And that's why he and Doug got on the phone then with the parole board and were part of the hearing. So.
Mm.
Yeah, they're not all on the same page.
Right.
And like I said, you have to understand they were children. They were traumatized. There were 13 children in that family.
Yeah, he had a lot of
kids. I mean, people who say Robert Kennedy was having affairs, it's like he didn't have time. He was a busy man.
Yeah. as they
Oh my gosh.
Well, you know, time is almost up, but this has been so fascinating, and I love when people like you put the research and time in so people like me don't have to do it.
Yes.
I get to ask all the questions, and, and for the people that in the chat room, thank you guys for participating with us. And the book itself, let me put it up there. So if you guys want to pick up the book, it's Lie Too Big to Fail, The Real History of the Assassination of Robert F. Kennedy by Lisa Pease. So what's next? Are you going to do any follow-ups or got another project? Because I know a book itself is...
Part of me wants to run from this in the sense that I've spent 30-some years in the JFK and the assassination 60s.
Exhausted.
It's like I'm out whale watching and looking for dolphins and deer in the hills.
Right,
it's like I need a break. But after that, who knows? But right now, I just want to live my life a little bit.
Yeah, you know, good for you.
Enjoy what I have.
Good for you. Is this gonna? Do you think this might become a movie? Or a TV
Well,
series?
I know somebody who's trying to make it become a movie, and I won't say any names or whatever, but, you know, there is a script with interest in production. It's not mine. And one of the reasons, it's funny because I am a screenwriter, and I actually, I have written other screenplays, but I didn't want to write about this one because I never wanted to mix the fact and the fiction.
Yeah.
And I know that in other, like, historical subjects that I've written about, at some point you start remembering what you wrote as opposed to what happened. Because a film can never be 100% accurate if it's not a documentary. And even then, most of those aren't that accurate
either. I've seen a few,
either.
You're like,
there's a lot of problematic documentaries. But yeah, I love screenwriting and I want to do more of it. But this one story, I have an idea how I would tell it in an, like a slanted way, so to speak, you know, from a different angle. But not right now.
Enjoy for a while.
Yeah.
So let's, for the people that maybe tuned in halfway through, let's just do a minute summary of what we talked about and what your final thoughts are about what really happened.
So it's clear to me that Sirhan was set up. He was hypnoprogrammed. And again, this, you know, if you're just tuning in, that sounds fantastic.
Right.
But when you see my evidence, you're going to go, oh my gosh, I think she's right. Because there's so much evidence of this. Hypnoprogrammed not to kill Robert Kennedy. Hypnoprogrammed to fire blanks so that he would pull focus like a magic act. You look at the magician's assistant and you don't see what the magician is really doing. And there were at least two shooters behind Robert Kennedy, one being Thane Caesar, who we talked about. Mm-hmm. The other I didn't talk about because it's kind of a long story, and that's in the book. And a shooter on the table right next to Sirhan so that there were bullets coming from his direction.
Right.
But that person being in on it would know, like, not to hit the assassins.
Right, right.
Whereas hypnotized Sirhan could have fired at anybody, and that would have been dangerous. So.
And what's your take on why? Why did they kill Kennedy?
Robert Kennedy, for one, was going to be even more radical than his brother John in the sense that he really wanted to end the Vietnam War by then. And he'd been kind of a early proponent of, oh, we need to stop the communists. We need to do something. And he was a big fan of paramilitary operations until he saw they really didn't work and that they were just destroying the country and the people. And then he just wanted all war to end. And John Kennedy gave a peace speech, and then he's killed. You know, Martin Luther King, a year to the day after he said we have to end the war in Vietnam, he's killed. Malcolm X, who says, you know, American empire has to stop, we're killing people all over the world, he's taken out. And the fourth in a five-year period, four of the top leaders of the left were killed in America. And if you don't think that had something to do with what we've seen in the last few years, you're not paying attention. All right, because how can Democrats stand up when the best of them are killed for standing up?
Yeah.
That's why these cases matter. That's why we need to hold people accountable, even posthumously. Smear their names, smear their family legacy, you know, take their money away. I don't know what we can do, but it's like Alan Dulles was head of the CIA. He was fired by JFK, and now his brother comes along. And Robert Kennedy was secretly investigating JFK's assassination on the side.
He
didn't want to do anything about it till he became president. But he told his friends, look, when I get in there, we're going to figure this out, who really did it. So CIA had yet another motive for killing him because they didn't want to be exposed in the JFK case. And they didn't want to wait till he was president because that would be too obvious, right? So they wanted to take him out en route. They wanted to make sure it was staged with a close audience and somebody obviously firing a gun, but it was still staged, and that's the problem.
And I always find it funny nowadays that I see where a lot of CIA, former CIA, become these news anchor, not anchors, but like analysts.
Senators and congressmen, too.
Analysts.
A lot of analysts.
And I'm like, wow, they sure have a lot of CIA, former CIA analysts.
Former.
Yeah. And I just like, interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, how do people find your book, find you, all that good stuff?
Yes. You can find the book at some bookstores, actually still have it on the shelves. I would recommend go to your favorite independent bookstore. You can, of course, get it from Amazon, but please support your local bookstore. And if you don't have any money, please don't download it free in a PDF off the internet. That just rewards thieves. Get it from the library.
There
I don't care if you don't want to pay for it, but get it from an organization that's helping the community. Libraries are fantastic organizations. So
that's great.
You can even get it on an ebook from the library. So if you're a Kindle reader, whatever, you can check it out.
Yeah. I'm an audio person, so I love
the audio version too, yes.
So, well, thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciate it. You'll have to come back sometime.
I'd love to.
We have more to talk about, I'm sure, since you're in town and not too far from here.
Yeah, thank you.
But everybody, thank you so much as always. Appreciate you tuning in and participating in today's show and every show that I do. And like I said, 4th of July is coming up, and we're going to hopefully be in Roswell next Friday. So we're going to be celebrating doing a live show from there. So we hope to bring you some great great guests. But until then, on Mondays, you can tune in for Robert Hensley's show, Minutemen Report. Bonnie Burkett on Wednesdays for Truth Be Told Transformation. And, of course, me on Fridays. Until then, thank you so much and have an amazing weekend. Take care. Bye. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media. Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio. Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows.